With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. I'm Ben Eshmade, and on this week's archive edition, we return to 2013 and director Clio Barnard's reimagining of Oscar Wilde's famous fairy tale, The Selfish Giant.
Well, I guess I see it as a love story, really. It's about a friendship between two boys. And I guess they are struggling to come of age.
This was a follow-up and a kind of sister film to Clio's experimental BAFTA-nominated documentary, The Arbor. In The Selfish Giant, she recasts Wilde's fairy tale in the estates of Bradford.
Think we could get that cable off at pylon?
It's too risky.
Think up money, though, Swifty. Come on, man. Can't do it on my own.
Oi, Swifty.
I like kitten.
Meet me first thing, 6 a.m. I want you to have a go at driving diesel on road. See what you can do. All right.
Never shy of dealing with tough subject matter, this is a film with a big emotional punch and incredible, brilliant debut performances from its young teenage cast. I caught up with Clio in the catacombs of a cinema in central London.
This is your second film, but in some ways it's kind of like a second debut, I suppose, because you're going from the documentary to the feature film genre.
Yeah, it'd be great if I could just continue to debut each film. But yeah, I guess technically speaking, it isn't a debut because The Arbor's a feature length film. And yeah, it's this kind of hybrid between documentary and fiction. This is a much more straightforward fictional narrative film. And I suppose in terms of, for me, that was something that I hadn't done before and I didn't know whether I could do it, from writing the script to directing the actors. And, yeah, so it was, it was a challenge in a brilliant way.
Oh, no, not him. You've been excluded, Fenton.
Easy now.
I'm calling security.
I think quite often one film grows out of another, and this definitely grew out of The Arbor. After I'd finished The Arbor, I think I'd always had this thing in the back of my mind that I wanted to do this contemporary adaptation, very loose adaptation of this Oscar Wilde fairy story. And I guess from making The Arbor and meeting kids and getting to know kids and then being around the set, and one child in particular called Matty and his best friend Michael, that I knew who the children in the story could be, but it took a while to figure out who the giant could be. But this boy Matty and his best friend Michael worked for a guy who was a dodgy scrap man, basically, and there was a real ambiguity about whether he was giving them opportunities or exploiting them. And so that was a big part of the inspiration and trying to, in some ways, to put that together with this Oscar Wilde fairy story was, you know, the jumping off point for the film.
Got that bridle too tight on that horse?
Mm-hmm.
Let me come sort it out for you.
You're a bad influence, Benson!
Go, go, go! Go and go!
I know where we can get some cable. It makes us go faster, though, yeah?
Yeah, man!
Well, I guess I see it as a love story, really. It's about a friendship between two boys. And I guess they are struggling to come of age, and they've got really no male role models around them, and they've happened upon this guy called Kitten, who's a scrap man. And it's really about the impact of getting involved with that man and really working for him, the impact that that has on their relationship, and really that from meeting him, their relationship unravels with sort of kind of tragic consequences.
There was a real palpable sense of tension. You know, I mean, you could kind of half feel it. And I didn't even realise why that was. That was deliberate, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's deliberate. And I guess that's built up through, you know, the writing of the story and then the editing and also the sound. So there are narrative elements, I think, that build that up, obviously. But there's also something with the sound, I think, that gradually builds.
There's also, and again, maybe a lot of this kind of came together in the editing or in the script writing, but I would describe it, you know, as we've talked about fairy tales, that there is a strong sense of darkness, but obviously you must have included, you know, moments of hope. Like I could say one moment that struck me at the beginning was the horses on the field with the stars in the sky. You know, that was the most fairy tale moment.
I think I see other fairy tale moments in there that, so, you know, Arbor slays the giant and the giants, he steals the giant's treasure, which is not gold, it's copper. So, and the giant sets him an impossible task, which is to dig up this buried treasure. And, you know, there's a moment where Arbor kind of busts the princess out of the castle and he turns up on his horse. but this is him busting his mate Swifty out of the school. So, you know, there are elements there that I think are a bit, in narrative terms, that I think are a bit fairy tale-ish. And in terms of the way it relates to the original story, I think even though it's very different from the original story, I think there are some things that are still there. So the original story is about the wounds of love, and I think this is about the wounds of love, and it's about excluding children and the kind of what gets lost when you exclude children. I suppose it's a Victorian fairy story, and perhaps we might idealise children from the past, but it seems to me that the children who get excluded now are kids like Arbor and Swifty, or Matty and Michael, and the kids who were, you know, around us when we were making the Arbor. And I think we exclude them at our peril. And I guess they're, you know, more than being excluded, I think they're also criminalised. And there are so few opportunities for those boys, and so few role models for them, I think, male role models.
I suppose going back to the idea of hope, which is sort of following on what you're saying, is that it seems inevitable in the film that they're going to get chucked out of school, and it seems inevitable that their families aren't going to support them in their moment of need. But there, as you say, in this kind of fantastical, little fantastical elements, there is some hope.
Well, I think their families do support them. Like, I think the mothers in both families are incredibly supportive of both boys. That, you know, they're fighting like crazy against the odds to support their kids. You know, so Swifty's mum is telling him to go to school, and Arbor's mum is desperately trying to sort of help him to get him to school. But, you know, I think what they're up against is too big for them to be able to kind of contend with. So I think their families are there for them and doing their best for them in those circumstances. And now it's like, oh, there's some hope, yeah. Well, I guess I think Arbor's love for Swifty, I think, is incredibly hopeful. And I think, you know, I'm sure Matty would absolutely die of embarrassment if I described what he felt for Michael as being anything like love. But, you know, and actually somebody asked me this question, what was it that enchanted you, which I actually thought was quite a good way of putting it if you're thinking about a fairy tale. And it was really Matty's love for Michael that enchanted me. And I think that's the hope that's at the heart of the film. And I think the ending is hopeful. And, you know, I wanted the ending to be as open as possible. But for me, the ending's hopeful because I think you understand that Arbor is not going to emulate Kitten's selfishness and greed, that something's shifted for him and something's changed. And I think Mrs. Swift's forgiveness is also incredibly hopeful.
Interested to know influences. I mean, one film, and I think you've mentioned this yourself, that comes to mind instantly is Kes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Kes, I think, is a very clear sort of reference point. And in some ways, it partly came out of watching films with my kids. You know, so The Bicycle Thieves and 400 Blows and Kes and The Kid with the Bike and an Iranian film called The Apple. So, which are all sort of realist films, but that use metaphor. And so it's definitely within that tradition of filmmaking. And I think with Kes, you know, it was made in 69. So, you know, I think 40 years later to kind of think about what a kid that might be a bit like Billy in Kes might be contending with now. Mm. You know, I guess I think it's a good time to look again at what kids can't go down the pit anymore. what life might be like for them.
What? Kitten, you have to borrow that cable.
I'm busy. You can handle it better than that. What are you doing?
He's holding his reins too tight.
What?
He's holding his reins too tight, pulling it back.
Loosen reins. Where'd you learn that?
Second to road races when I was younger.
Did you ever come across a line where you thought, that's too bleak? You know, the characters shouldn't go that far.
It's funny because I don't see the film as being that bleak, to be honest. And I know people. Some people, I mean, I've read reviews and people think it's really bleak. And then also equally, people will say they think it's really beautiful. And I don't think they just mean the way it's, you know, the way it looks. I think they mean the relationship between the boys. And it's, you know, it's based on people that I've got to know and become very fond of. And also some of the other things that happen in it are things from about the copper thefts are from newspaper articles. So it's not, you know, this is stuff that's happening. Mm. And I don't think we should turn away from it. I think that would be the wrong thing to do.
Do you think that's going to become, I mean, you've only done two films, but that's the sort of path you're starting to walk down. Is it one that you're going to go further with, do you think?
I don't know. It's quite hard to say, but The Selfish Giant grew very directly out of The Arbor. And so I think those two films have a relationship with each other. And I think the next film isn't growing in the same way, I suppose, in that the people have come to me with things and said, you know, would you be interested in making this film? So it's a kind of, the starting point for the next two things that I'm working on is different. Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the making of the film. We've mentioned the two boys. I think it was you found one of them very easily, but the other one was a little bit more of a struggle to kind of discover.
Yeah, so Connor was the casting director. Amy saw him on the first day. And then, it took longer to find Sean. And also, actually, we swapped them around because, to begin with, Connor was cast as Swifty and we were looking for an Arbor. And then at a certain point, it became clear that Sean could be Swifty and Connor could be Arbor. And it's kind of hard now to imagine it any other way. You know, I'm really glad that inspiration came.
And the rest of the cast, did they kind of come quite naturally? Were you given a lot of help to try and find them?
Well, Amy Hubbard she's a brilliant casting director. So I guess she was, I don't know, for want of a better term, she was sort of putting people in front of me, or I was meeting actors who were brilliant. So yeah, it did happen quite easily. And I think, you know, they're a really brilliant bunch of actors, the adult actors, very experienced and incredibly generous in terms of working with the kids and giving giving the kids what they needed in a way for the kids to respond to. And also so much of my attention was on the children that, you know, the adult actors, it was really about trusting them to do what they do brilliantly. And, yeah, I mean, it was wonderful. And Siobhan Finneran was in Rita Sue and Bob too. And I really wanted her to be in the Arbor, but she couldn't do it. So it was lovely to be able to cast her in this. You know, so I was pretty excited to meet her because of her connection to Andrea Dunbar and everything. And she, she came in and said, I really, really want to play Mrs. Swift. And that was very easy, that in particular. But all of those adult actors, I think, are really wonderful. I think, Elliot Tissensaw, who plays Arbor's brother, he's a really wonderful actor. As is Steve Evarts, as is Sean Gilder and Lorraine Ashbourne. You know, they're brilliant, brilliant actors. And Rebecca Manley, you know, they're brilliant. And to have them in parts where, in terms of the amount of screen time, there's not necessarily that much screen time. I guess I felt very lucky to have that much sort of fire, I suppose, in terms of those their sort of calibre of performance. I think one of the things that really interests me is the sort of murky territory between something that's real and the way you represent it. And I think that is there with this film, perhaps more in the process at which, you know, it was everything was arrived at, rather than actually, I don't think it's as obvious, I suppose, is what I'm saying, as it is. Because I think in the Arbor, you're being constantly reminded this is a, it's constructed. And I think with The Selfish Giant, in some ways it's the same, but you're not being constantly reminded. So, you know, the boy that Arbor's based on, he's in the film for a little moment when he goes in to the pub to get someone to help him put the car on the cart. That's Matty, who says, yeah, all right, I'll help you. And he's playing pool with Michael, actually. And then he comes out and helps his fictional self, you know, put the car on the cart, which is something that Matty did, you know, that he told me about that went into the film. So there are some layers there, but you wouldn't necessarily know them unless I told you, I suppose, or unless you knew something about the process.
Moving to the final question, I mean, going back to the fairy tale, which is where it all started, for anyone who's read it, and I do recommend that people, as well as watching the film, go and read the story. But it at the end, it's very transformative. It's, it is entangled with religious imagery as well, but it's a story you come away from with a slight sense of something bigger. And hopefully, I think that's the same with the film. You come away slowly adding things up until you come to this, I don't know, a question maybe? Well, the question I think personally, I came away from it was who was the selfish giant?
Oh, okay.
Which of the characters or the acts was the selfish giant? I mean, is that something that you can see in the film?
Well, I think, in a sort of more literal way, the selfish giant is Kitten. But I think... I think it's a selfish ideology is the selfish giant.
And maybe hopefully we will be a little bit, as human beings, a little bit less selfish after seeing this film.
Yeah, that's the big plan.
Well, congratulations. It's so beautiful.
Thank you very much, yeah.
Mad for horses, you know. Trust me.
Come on.
I will.
Well, off you go.
Thanks to Clio for speaking to me, and also thanks to composer Harry Escott for providing some of the film score, which you heard throughout. Kate Muir of The Times said of the film, "Britain has found a new director to be proud of," and gave it a 5-star review. It went on to win the Europa Cinema's Best European Film Award at Cannes, an incredible piece of filmmaking that is hard to shake off after viewing. I'm Ben Eshmade. Thanks for listening to this archive edition of Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast, here to inspire more people to discover and love the arts with weekly episodes of archive finds and themed series. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.